Hi, everybody. I'm Taylor Onion, and you're listening to The Bloom Pod, the show where we use the power of storytelling to share the insights of entrepreneurs, educators, and sports professionals who are chasing big dreams. We spend time asking guests about the experiences they've had that have helped them bloom into who they are today. Our final guest for season four, rounding us out on this second to last Tuesday of Women's History Month, is wife, mom, professor, relaxed hustler, and current manager for basketball advancement with the Toronto Raptors, Dr. Lacey Carmen Johnson. Please enjoy. All right. I don't know. I didn't tell you this ahead of time, but you are officially the last guest of season four.
Okay. Ending with a bang. All right.
That's exactly right. Excited to have you fill in that slot. And I'm going to hand it over to you right from the jump. Like your former, athlete, former coach turned lecturer, professor, jack of all trades, Dr. LCJ, LCJ Gems, all the things. So let's start off with having you give us kind of the 2-minute synopsis of who you are.
Let's see, who is LCJ? I think the way that I've started to kind of frame it when asked this question is a bit of an underdog, but someone who always strives to be the ultimate teammate. I look back on my career as someone even in high school who was not a starter, but was a captain. So finding a way to lead from wherever I was, to being a walk-on student athlete who, ended up being a national qualifier, to coming into the sports industry in a very like roundabout way that I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do next. So I just ended up coaching and doing a teaching fellowship, and then had moved into student support, became a full-time professor, academic advising, and now at the professional level doing athlete development. And so a little bit of everything, like you mentioned, Jack or Jane of all trades, right? Whichever folks prefer. But it is, I just pride myself in leading through service, leading through love, and really trying to be the ultimate teammate to everyone that I come across.
I love it. I did not realize we have that in common. I was also a walk-on at Illinois. Yes. I didn't realize you did that.
Team so that's walk-on nation.
Yep. I'm all about it. I love it. I love it. So you mentioned a little bit about how you kind of got into sports kind of in this roundabout way where you were like, I don't know what to do next, so let me just go and coach. Was there an opportunity that came to you that was like, okay, I'll just do this until I kind of figure it out? Or was it like, let me go and pursue these coaching opportunities or these opportunities in sport, and maybe while I'm doing that, I'll kind of figure it out.
Well, as an undergrad, I thought that, or I went in and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a medical doctor. Like that was okay. That was what I, like my passion or what I thought it was. And then I got into some of the classes and I was like, I can do this. It's not like it's too challenging academically. I just don't feel like it's going to like fulfill my heart's purpose of really being able to be impactful and developmental in the lives of others. And so I thought about like, oh, if I get to be an orthopedic surgeon, that'll be great, but I'm cutting bones and I'm not really getting to talk to folks. And I'm a little bit grateful that no one ever brought up physical therapy, because I probably would have went that route, because it is probably more in line from a sciencey side of how I would have envisioned my life going. And once I went away from the medical doctor, I loved the field that I was in, that sports medicine, the psychology piece of it. And I took a class my senior year and I had a professor say, well, Lacey, you like to talk. Maybe you should be a professor. And I was like, maybe not a bad idea. It still is a way to become a doctor in a different route. And it provides me with the space to be around people, to talk to people, to impact folks in the way that I thought most suited my heart. And as I was looking for graduate school, which is really interesting that I graduated at the start of the recession, and I didn't even realize like we were in a recession because I was in school. So I wasn't like struggling looking for a job or anything like some of my counterparts were. And I had the opportunity to be a teaching fellow at a Division III school. So, at Division III, you wear all the hats. So I worked in the AD's office. I was a coach, and I also got to teach classes. And throughout my career, I have done all of those things, whether it's all three at one time, two at one time, one at a time. And it really just like served the work ethic. It was showed the work ethic that I had and how I was always going to do whatever needed to be done in the process. So I kind of landed there a bit by happenstance. I put all of my eggs in one basket and applied to this one school that I had all the way in Massachusetts that I never thought that I was going to go. My mom was like, "You didn't want to go to that far for undergrad, and all of a sudden you want to do it for grad school." And yeah, here we are. So I went for a year and then I got offered a full-time coaching job, and I thought I was going to be in that for a while. And 5 years into that space, I coached my first two All-Americans and I left Oregon. I left the long jump pit that day and I knew God was pulling me in a different direction. I didn't know where, I didn't know how I was going to get there, didn't know what that was going to look like. And I moved, you know, a couple months later into the student support and academic advising. And I've been kind of on that holistic student development or holistic athlete development since then.
Yeah. Gosh, what a journey. And I was noticing too, as I was kind of doing my research for this, that almost, I think it was like what, three or four different stops where it was like assistant coach, adjunct professor, assistant coach, assistant professor, like visiting, like, you know, all the different kind of terminology for it. So it's interesting that it's been like, when you conceptualize, to me, when you conceptualize academics and student athlete development, that's literally the marriage of the two things that you were already doing from a coaching and from a teaching standpoint, but now just in one role. I'm curious to know from your perspective as someone who's been on both sides of that, so who's worn several different hats at one time in separate roles, and then someone who probably was wearing multiple hats in one role as well. What are some of the maybe like the key differences that you saw from the academic side of campus to the athletic side of campus? What were those experiences like?
I mean, I think ultimately I'm a lifelong educator. So that's a similarity between both, is being able to find the space and the place to educate with both hats or different hats, one hat, however many that works, however that works. As far as the differences, I don't know. I kind of struggle a little bit with the differences because I think it's the developmental piece that exists in both. I remember being at one university, and I'm not going to call it out because what I'm going to say is a little controversial, but I remember being in a staff meeting and they said, you know, we have to prepare them to be in college. And I'm thinking, but they're already here. What do you mean we have to prepare them? But then I was working with student athletes and it was sometimes a little bit of the same thing. You know, you spend the first year or two really trying to make sure that they're acclimated to it. And so it was very similar. It didn't matter if it was a student that had a jersey or one who did not. They were both in similar spaces, and how could we provide the experiences they needed, the support that they needed to get to where they were. Obviously, there are politics and things on both sides. Probably the biggest difference is that when I was teaching, I had a schedule that I could be done by 2 o'clock and I can go home. We know in athletics that does not exist. It is essentially a 24-hour job, and I struggled with boundaries and all of those things early on in my career, and it's something that I'm really, you know, starting to like adjust now. And we can talk more about that later in this new terminology that I just came across that I think is just the most, it is the pinnacle of like how I've been trying to put words to how I feel as I progress in my career. And it's called relaxed hustle.
Okay.
So we subscribe to this grind culture, but instead, like, I want to be on the relaxed hustle train.
I like it. I saw you tweeted about that the other day, and I don't want to forget to come back to it. So let's talk more about it now. What is that, like, the relaxed hustle? Where did it come into your head? Did you read it somewhere? Where did it come from?
I'm taking this this course through a consulting firm right now as just like my own form of professional development. And it was something that was mentioned. And so I really want to do a little bit more research into it. I think there probably is like specific definitions and things that go with it based off of the person who coined the term. I think the way that I see it is I want to do deep and intentional and impactful work, but I also want to be able to have boundaries and I want to subscribe to self-care. And I want to make sure that I'm being on purpose every single day in my work. And so, and not even my work, just in my life, you know, like with my family, with my friends, with my job, like I want all of these things to be able to flow organically without feeling like I'm completely running myself into the ground, because I do want to enjoy this life that we have. And I know sometimes we get caught up in sports that we're constantly grinding, right? That you look up and 6-10 years have passed and you've accomplished all of these great things, but it's like, man, how many vacations did I get to go on? When did I actually get to spend time with my friends? When did I get to enjoy this life that I truly have, and not just in a sense of I got to win championships and be around, you know, great athletes and people, but like, when did I get to do things that satisfy my heart?
Right. I think it's not exclusive to athletics for sure. I think it's like something that affects people who work in any field, but there's this kind of idea of, you know, when I have this job, then I'll start taking more time, or when I, you know, when I have kids, then I'll feel more settled in my life, or when I have a spouse or a significant other, a partner or whatever it is, like then I'll feel XYZ. And that has maybe been the biggest myth that I've uncovered, I think, in adulthood, where it's like, no, because all these things, I'm like, oh, okay, I got this job. Okay, now I was making more money at this job. Okay, now I did this thing. And not at any of those points, because there's always something else that you're chasing.
Yeah.
So literally never. How does thinking about something like a relaxed hustle, how would you apply it to that knowledge that it does it, you know, that's the other phrase that comes with it, right? Is the grind never stops. Like, how do you fit those two things together?
But it can stop, right? I can put some boundaries and some times on the fact that, look, what I do subscribe to is the nap culture heavy, right? So I'm going to put my phone on do not disturb and I'm going to take my nap like that 60 minutes, or I'm kind of like a sleeper, not really a napper. So like 2.5 hours, the world will be okay. The world will be okay if I don't respond right away, or if I'm not dedicated to creating some innovative program that's going to change the world. Like I promise it's okay. I also have a weird sleeping pattern anyway, that like between 2:30 and 5 a.m. those are like, I feel like the times when my brain like works the best sometimes. So I can get up and put together a whole like awesome plan. And then I can go back to sleep until 9 o'clock when, you know, there's other folks who say the people who are going to be millionaires, they read X amount of books and they get up at 5 a.m. and work out every day and all that. Like if that's what it's going to take, that's not going to be me.
Right.
It's okay. That's just not going to be me. So yes, it can stop and you can put some of those boundaries that makes sense to you. It doesn't always have to make sense to others. And I think that is what we have to be okay with understanding and defining and just being clear and unapologetic about as well, that the grind is what you make it. And I think we have an 8-hour work day, but when you think about in those work days, how many hours are you really doing deep, impactful work? Most times it's probably 3, maybe 4 hours out the day. So right. If you dedicate 3 or 4 hours out of the day to do that same work, you also have a life to be able to do all of the other things that make your heart smile.
That is one of the biggest things that I feel like was uncovered, hopefully for everyone, but definitely for me as an individual, thinking about like, especially when we switched in early on in the pandemic, right, in quarantine, and it's like, okay, typically I'm at work from 8:30 to 5 o'clock, sometimes 9 PM if we had an event or whatever was going on. And I felt like I was doing something the whole day, right? Like I get to the end of the day, I'm exhausted, whatever. Well, then we switched to, you know, this remote and virtual environment. And my coworker and I were like, what were we doing? Like, what were we doing from 8:30 AM to 5 PM every day? And it's, you know, obviously you mix in the human interactions and lunch breaks and some of these different things. And then that's where you make up for that time. But you're exactly right. There's only a 3-4 hour window every day where we were actually like doing, like knocking out tasks or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Super. It's like just crazy to think about. the eight hour workday, 40-hour work week, such a made up, somebody made it up somewhere along the way.
It's a concept that we have all subscribed to because that's what we were told and nobody wants to challenge it.
Exactly. Gosh, I could spend a lot of time there, but for the sake of this episode, I want to jump into, so you mentioned the consulting thing that you're going through right now. You also have your own coaching consulting business, AIST. Yes. Tell us about that. What is that? How'd you get started on it? What's going on there?
Well, we know that in like student athlete development, like career and professional development is kind of like my niche. Like it's the space that I really love. I want to be able to like help and prepare those for what's next or those who are trying to go through a transition, because I've experienced plenty of transitions as my career has been a bit windy. And so I thought, okay, why not open this up to more than just the student athletes that I serve? I mean, I'm doing it not even in a roundabout way, in a very exact way with a lot of like young professionals anyway. So like, let's, you know, create a website. George Midget was awesome and like really bringing that to life, like the vision that I had with the color schemes. And it's funny because he was creating different logos and whatnot, he just came up with Laced one day. And, I didn't even know how I was going to use it or what it was going to be like. And like, I think probably 18 months later, it's when I started kind of my Instagram series of my fashion. Mm-hmm. So I like to put together cool outfits and stuff. And so like you have the Laced hashtag kind of went with it, but that was a little off subject, but part of my brand and a little bit about, you know, who I am. And so the coaching piece of it is professional development, career coaching. Like, how can I help you get to that next phase? And that could be anything as simple as with resumes, doing interview prep, speaking engagements to larger groups, to student athletes or corporate, whoever it is, just being able to offer those services, offer the wisdom and the knowledge that I have, offer the ability to not deal with some of the landmines that I did and that I have gone through. And then the consulting piece is working with different organizations to strategize on, you know, how to make them better. So, you know, whether it's revamping your onboarding process, that could be some DEI initiatives and what that looks like as we move into this more inclusive space that folks are trying to occupy. So I have a lot of different, I think, skills and gifts, and it was just a way for me to open that up to more than just what I was doing in my everyday work. Something I wanted to help out others, and I felt like it was a space to be able to do it more globally.
Yeah. When did that first start? Like, when did you first start doing that kind of on the side?
So I think I launched, when did I? See, it was in 20 during the pandemic. So I'm trying to remember if it, okay. I think it was 2021.
Okay.
So it was like a year later because I had the thought I wanted to release my blog. Honestly, I just kind of wanted to start the website so that I could have a blog and get my thoughts out because I do like to write and I feel like I kind of have some interesting stories to share. And then it turned into much more than that, but I wanted to do it with my 34th birthday.
Okay.
And so since then we've kind of been going with it. The company name is ACE. And so it's a playoff of my boys' names, ACE and Duke, A-C-E-D. But it's accelerating, curating, executing your dreams.
I love it. I love not only the play on names, but the fact that it's also an acronym makes me super happy. Just as somebody that likes language and different things in general.
I'm here for all the cheesy, but subliminal messaging.
Yep. We love it. So at some point, in addition to all the things that we've talked about, so moving from coaching and from being a professor into still doing adjunct stuff, but more in the student athlete development space, into more of a like director of career specifically stuff right at Purdue before mm-hmm. making the jump to the pro ranks.
Yes.
So walk us through kind of how you made that decision to, this is my dog, just heard somebody bark outside. Walk us through kind of how you decided to make that move. You know, what was there something that, like, did you always want to work in pro sports? Was it just like, this is the time, this feels like the right opportunity, the right organization? What did that look like for you?
No, I did not always want to work in pros. Actually, I never wanted to work in pros. I think if you would have said the NFL, it would have resonated a little bit more with me, because I worked with football, I believe, for 8 years prior. Never actually worked with men's basketball at no point in my entire career. I worked with women's basketball, but never men's basketball. So I think, one, that was God's sense of humor, because I've always said I would never work with men's basketball, and here I am. And I absolutely adore my guys. So that really shape-shifted my thoughts and feelings on this particular population. But I think just the change, I knew that, I remember walking into my boss's office in January of 2021. And I said, I don't know where I'm going to be, but this will be my last semester here. Mm. I had no job opportunity. There wasn't anything like in the works, but I just knew that this was, I always know when it's time for a change. With every career, every university that I moved to, I always knew when it was time to make that next step. And so I started, I think, more actively, like, looking at different opportunities, and had some different interviews and whatnot. But this opportunity is one that more so came to me versus me looking for it. I don't even know how I would have found it. And I don't think I would have thought, oh, let's move to Toronto. Right. So after a lot of conversations, doing some different presentations and things, and going through the whole process, I was kind of down to this and another opportunity, and I felt like this was the right space for me. And coincidentally, not, I think 3 days after I signed my contract, there was another opportunity that was just as enticing as this one, but I still felt like this was the right move for me. And I've gotten here, been able to kind of like make some changes, do some cool, innovative things, realize that we're a little bit different than a lot of my counterparts in the league, and have been able to make, you know, a lot of like great new friends and colleagues, and really kind of like learning the business and understanding how we can continue to push the envelope, to be innovative, to be different, and to really stand on kind of the principles that we embody within the organization of being on the forefront of change and innovation. So it's been a cool experience to be able to do some of the stuff that we have here. And living in Toronto is awesome, minus the fact that, you know, it goes like winter till May, but that's okay.
Gosh.
We managed to make it work, and it's just cool to be in a city, and the diversity is awesome for my family.
That's awesome. Your role there, so obviously athlete development has played a huge role. That, to my knowledge, is a little bit of what you're doing with the Raptors, but there are also other kind of facets of it. So what all does the role that you've taken, like, what all are you doing?
Yeah, I get to do some of the day-to-day operations, making sure folks are where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. We have like our transition between our G League team and our big club. So going back and forth with that, the initial onboarding of any of our draftees, our free agents, 10-day contract guys, guys who are just coming in for tryouts and workouts. We're kind of the first line of contact for all of that, and really act as a liaison to all of the departments within the organization. So that part of it is cool. That's like much more of the internal piece. Then we handle all of the programming, development, education for our players, whether that's league mandated or things that we feel really satisfy and embody the Raptor way, as we like to call it. And then the third piece of it is kind of the external facing piece that I have, which is really cool and unique for me, because it's the first time I've been able to like experience that. So liaising with all of the player agents, managers, for any external partnerships that exist. And so getting to go and see all of the commercial shoots and really kind of seeing some of that stuff from its inceptions, whether it's a brand that's reaching out directly to me to be connected with a player, or going back and forth with the player teams and reps so that we can make sure the scheduling is appropriate for, you know, our practices and all of the days and available and not available days that that exist, and then getting to actually be on site for some of that stuff. So the commercials, like seeing them, you know, 4 months later, but knowing that I was actually there for the 5 hour shoot that existed and seeing a 30 second spot that comes with it. But it's cool to be able to see that piece of it. And then also cool just in general, the same way it was with the student athletes, to see the development piece from when you first meet your athlete to the development that they show over, whether it be 6 months to 2 years that I've been here now.
Gosh. So talk about wearing a lot of different hats for one single role. I mean, the things you just described in my head, like you can kind of see the crossover, but also they're kind of totally separate entities. Like they're different things. It's all kind of operational, you know, relational. It's a mixture, but kind of different things. So just like I was curious to know from, you know, the academic side of campus to coaching, some differences there. What are differences that you have noticed between working in pro sports from working in college sports?
In the pro sports, it's a little less siloed here. I just, maybe because the organization is smaller. So the way in college, we didn't always have access to, probably most people don't have access to the athletic director. Like I have direct access to my general manager and president. Now I don't go to them with, you know, any little thing, but it is also really nice that just they're walking through and we can all be having lunch together, or I just come to the office to say hi and like ask how my kids are. Like, I think that piece of it is really cool. And it's something that haven't truly experienced maybe at smaller universities, but once you start to get to like Power Five universities, you don't always have that feel. So from an organizational standpoint, that's pretty cool. As far as like the differences in working with the players, as we have seen lately, it's starting to come a bit of age now with, in the college space, but with NIL, but our players are walking billboards. So everything comes at a cost and the consequences are a lot larger at the pro level than they are at the college level, because there's probably a lot of things that can get swept under the rug or really don't come to the forefront. But any little thing, whether it's a tweet gone wrong, some content that's posted that was inappropriate, or you just happen to be out and you're in a crappy outfit and somebody took a picture of it and now you're blasted on the internet. Like, it's just, you're always kind of watched and seen. And so really, you know, hoping that the guys are understanding like the impact in a positive way that they can have, but then also how it could be negative, and knowing that you have to have a lot of really tough skin because people are always going to have things to say. So it's a balance of the up and down, but knowing that everything has a cost here.
Yep. That makes sense. What would you say? So for people who are interested in whether they're like, you know, in undergrad or grad school and considering going pro versus college, whether they've worked in college and they're thinking about going to the pro ranks or vice versa, what kind of advice, I guess, would you have for folks who are considering careers in those spaces?
I think specifically for pros, I really want you to question why you want to work in pros. Sports. Is it because you want to be attached to a team? Is it because you think there's more notoriety? Like, what's your true purpose behind what you're trying to do? Like, you really need to be real with yourself and like have some truthful conversations. I love basketball, but I'm not a fan of the sport to where I'm just like, oh, I get to work specifically with this player, or, you know, we're playing this team this week, and so this person's going to come into our arena. Like, I don't care. I'm here to impact, make a difference. Our 15th person on the bench is just as important to me as our starter, our number one, our all-star. Like, I want to be able to impact and empower and develop them all the same and everybody's going to need something different. So make sure your motives are really in check with whatever you want to do. And so why do you want to work in pros? But then also why do you want to work in college? And are you chasing a title? Are you chasing a school? And why? So I think that's really important, because I get asked all the time, oh, can I pick your brain? Can I pick your brain? When people think, oh, this is a dream job. This is a dream job for who? Like, this was never my dream job. I can't even say it's like my dream job now. I've never had a dream job. I go where I feel like I'm placed, where God has really called me to be. And I continue to move in those directions, because regardless of who I'm impacting that maybe you know, I'm still impacting someone. They're someone's brother, someone's partner, someone's husband. So check your motives. Don't chase the titles and all of that good jazz. And just really think about purpose, the purpose work of like what you're trying to do.
I want to come back to something you just said, which also made my heart happy, was that you don't feel like you've ever had a dream job, that you just kind of, you know, gone where either God has placed you, where you felt called. That is also, I feel similarly, but I also feel like it's just like, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It's the question, right? Where it's like, where do you see yourself in 10 years from now or 15 years from now? Like, I don't know. If you had asked me 10, 15 years ago, I definitely would have told you where I am now. Like, how do you like, it's like asking somebody to see the future essentially, you know, and kind of describe that. That's an interesting.
People have always asked me that. And I will say, I have always been true to my guns that I don't have it. I don't see the future. Maybe there's one or two things that like I would like to do, but I have always said this: what I am supposed to do doesn't necessarily exist right now. Mm. And I just continue to be great and do the work in the space that I'm in, and whatever is next is always going to find me. And it always has, because 3 years ago, I would have never even thought that I would be here. And so who's to say in 3 years, maybe I'm still here, but I'm doing something completely different, or have shape-shifted what this industry looks like, you know, as a whole, or what everyone else is doing. Like, now they're kind of morphing into a different space. And so I'm okay with that. I have always been, I think, a little bit outside of the box and been able to march to my own beat, and I don't get flustered when people ask me that. And when people aren't happy with the answer that I give, that's fine. That's your opinion on it. That's great that you have designed what you think your career is supposed to look like. I will go and be grateful. And I mean, I'm going to graciously support you, but that doesn't, you know, please don't judge the fact that I don't have some linear path to what I think is supposed to be next.
Right. That's it. Literally is why it pays to know your purpose, and it like pays for you to understand your purpose, because if you're walking in that, there will always be an inroad to whatever the next thing is for you.
It's funny you just said like to knowing your purpose. I was having a conversation with a colleague as we were walking just through town in one of the cities that we were just in, and I said, I believe heavily in my purpose, but I believe in being on purpose. Like, I want my soul to be on fire when I go to work, but not just in work, like in everything that I do. I can be purposeful, intentional, and impactful, even with some random person like on the street. And so we walk and we talk for probably another 7 to 10 minutes. And then some random guy comes up to us. He tells us he's just lost his job. He's dealing with like some sobriety issues. And so then we had the opportunity to really kind of pour into him for like 5 minutes, some random person we didn't know. Wow. And we just looked at each other and we were like, that's being on purpose. Like,
right.
How was that even set up? that was nothing more than God like reminding us, like, you're on the right track. You have the right thoughts. You're doing the right thing. It doesn't always look like what everyone else is saying, but that filled my heart more than anything else that I had, done on paper that day.
Yep. I love a good affirmation from God. This is part of the plan. All right. So I'm going to shift into kind of the final leg of the show here with the question that has to do with the namesake of the show. So what is one experience or maybe a series of experiences that you have had that you feel has helped you bloom into the person you are today?
Ooh, I have had some, I think I'm going to say like finding my voice. I've always kind of marched to my own beat, but I think early on, maybe as a kid, I was a little more timid in kind of speaking up, not only for myself, but for others as well. And so I remember in high school having there was an issue with one of our teammates. And so I like called a players only meeting. Well, it was supposed to be players only, but like my coach was like there, but she wasn't really allowed to say anything. And I like kind of had to let the teammate have it. To just like let her know, like, this is about more than just you. And I remember that first time I look back and I'm like, wow, I was never the same. I have never been the same since then. And I've had some experiences that have existed, you know, as an athlete, and then some also as a staff member, and a lot of times being the only person that looks like me in the room. And whenever I am that person, that only person in the room, it reminds me even more that I have to like speak up. Because my voice is needed. Like there's power and diversity of thought. And I know because I am different, I don't see things the way that other people always see them. My radical candor isn't always there. I'm still working on that piece of it, but I'm not afraid to say the hard things and bring things to the forefront. And so that piece of it is like a constant blooming for me, that I might say it and my voice might be shaky, but I think there's a quote like, don't be an echo, be a voice or something to that nature. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it's not just about me, like it's about others. And I have this very conscious, innate feeling to always like be for others what I didn't have for myself.
I love it. I love it. What a bloom and a continuous bloom at that.
Yes.
All right. So final few questions, kind of a couple of them are this or that. A couple of them are like actual questions, but meant to be. This is the, I have like three slashes. This is the quick peel / lightning / at one point we were calling it the slap chop. I don't know where it came from, but so this is the quicker version of these answers. So number one is, what has been your favorite city to live in?
Ooh, this is going to be a little controversial, but I'm going to say Nacogdoches, Texas. It was a town of 20,000 people and I loved it. I love the little small restaurants. I love that I could walk to work. I just love the small down home Southern country feel of it.
I love it. I hope somebody is listening that knows exactly where that is. Cause I feel
East
like
Texas.
East Texas, because that, okay, what am I thinking of here? It's Nacogdoches, Texas, and then Natchitoches, Louisiana.
Yep.
Right.
They're sister towns with the Caddo Indians.
Ah, I did not know that.
Yeah. The chief sent his two sons off. And then like when the sun rose, like wherever they were, that was their towns.
Wow. A new fun fact. Okay. All right. Number two, what is one thing at the end of your career, you're looking back on it, what is one thing you want your name to be associated with?
I'm not even going to say like some specific accolade. Like I just want to be known as the ultimate teammate. Someone who was always down for everyone else.
I love it. Okay. Favorite musician, and that can be a single musician or it could be a band or a group or a genre.
Yeah, this is terrible. I don't know. They actually asked me the other day if I would run the music at practice. And I said, oh, no. Because it can go from, we could go from Afrobeats to gospel to country to straight trap music, all in a matter of like 30 minutes. So I do not have a favorite or what? Even a go-to.
What's the last, if you can remember, like what's the last song you listened to today?
Oh, I haven't opened my iTunes in a while. Even when I'm on the plane, like I'm usually listening to podcasts.
Okay. I should have asked that. Favorite podcast.
Oh, favorite. I don't have a favorite, but I have like several that I like to listen to. I obviously like to listen to The Boom Pod. I like to listen to Starter 5. I like The Daily just for my news, mm-hmm. The New York Times option. And I like, I think is it, it's Change Church, and then anything by Sarah Jakes Roberts.
Okay. Very good. All right. That was kind of a twofer. So I'm going to skip to the fill in the blank, which is blooming is blank.
Blooming is being open.
Hmm. I like it. I don't think we've had anybody say that yet. I had somebody say delicious recently, and I'm trying to think of what the other one was, but I don't think we've had open yet. I like it. I like it. Well, Dr. LCJ, thank you so much for taking the time out of your crazy busy schedule to join me to help round out part two of season four, which we started back in April, maybe March of 2022. And just now in March of 23, we're wrapping it up. Finally, slowly but surely.
Okay. It's okay. It takes time. Greatness takes time.
That's right. That's what I'm going to start putting that in the show notes. That's why we're so delayed on getting this out. I love it. Well, thank you again. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me, and looking forward to season four?
Season five will be next.
Season five.
I know. It's crazy. Yep. I got something. Season five is going to be a little different. I got some plans for a change of, not scenery, because you're listening. So a change of audio, I guess, is what I'll call it.
Okay. I'm here. I'm ready to press the button.
I love it. All right. Well, we'll see you in season five.
All right.